talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. Going right to the front lines of history in the making, and it's being made in Ukraine. One hopeful sign, there are reports, fairly widespread reports, that high-ranking Russian officials, some oligarchs, some military leaders, are questioning Putin's decision to invade Ukraine and are very concerned that he might unilaterally decide to use nuclear weapons. That latter concern is more speculative. My own view, and I think a lot of people's view, is that he's saber-rattling to try to get his way. And then when he's beaten, he backs down. But when high-ranking Russian officials, oligarchs, and military people start to have doubts and question the Ukrainian invasion, it's not for moral reasons. These are not moral people. They would crush and exterminate anybody they thought they could get away with if it got the money or power. The reason that they're questioning it is that genocidal sadism is bad for business. Hitler was a genocidal maniac, very sadly wasn't assassinated early in his career, but he was also bad for an economy and bad for business. And so is Putin. That's the way they look at it. They don't look at it through a moral lens. I think it's time to step up the pressure on these oligarchs, on these military people, because even though Putin is a dictator, he's a Hitler wannabe, Stalin wannabe, but he's about 70 years too late, but he's killing a lot of people in the short run. A lot more pressure has to be put on the circle around him because he can't do it all by himself. He has to have co-conspirators among the oligarchs and among the generals and admirals. And one of the things I think we should be doing is to designate some of these people for execution. So far, we've designated them for seizing their yachts. But you know, when people are worth tens of billions of dollars, if you seize a $100 million yacht, it's an annoyance, but eventually they know they'll build another one or buy another one. Merrick Garland was very weak in one of his press conferences where he said, kind of shaking his finger, "You can try to hide your yacht, but we'll find it." It was so weak. Who cares about their yacht? Sink their yacht. They have them in Fiji. They have them in various places, Turkey, around the world. But if some of them died, that puts pressure. That puts a lot of pressure on them. And what I would do is start out with the oligarch who owns the Wagner Group. The Wagner Group is a private mercenary army of sadists. Putin uses them when he wants to send in, when he wants deniability, when he wants to send people into Africa, in Syria, now in Ukraine, and have them torture civilians. And he can say, well, they're not in the Russian army. I don't know who they are. You say, well, one of the major oligarchs who's close to you owns it. He'll get a $10 million fee. The country of Mali, M-A-L-I in Africa, hired them to come in and exterminate villages of people who are opposed to the government, paid him $10 million a month. Putin has brought them into Ukraine, 1,000 of them. And these oligarchs, as you know, and Putin as well, have stolen 80% of Russia's wealth. What do I mean by Russia's wealth? Their trade surplus from their oil revenue and their gas revenue. About 80% of it gets stolen by a handful of people. Putin and oligarchs who are beholden to him because he lets them steal money. And that is why the Russian military, one of the many reasons, has performed poorly, is because the tanks, artillery, ammunition, food, body armor, that all showed up on the books as having been bought by the state, was fake. They were fake invoices. And they ran out of ammunition. They didn't have body armor. They'd open up their field rations and it was moldy, crawling with maggots, been in an unrefrigerated warehouse for decades. But there were invoices for fresh field rations, for fresh ammunition, and that got stolen. That's why Putin has to continually try to claim success on a battlefield somewhere to prevent his own assassination. But, you know, we have droned Soleimani, the Iranian terror general in Iraq, responsible for killing a lot of American servicemen. We went after Osama bin Laden. We went after ISIS. We droned a lot of people. Russia's a terror state. Russia is simply a more sophisticated ISIS. Their objective is to subdue and cow and conquer as much as they can by going in and demoralizing and torturing civilians. And the problem for them is they picked the wrong country to do it. Ukraine is tough and unified. They're more unified than we are. They didn't have a January 6th where a bunch of people betrayed their country and stormed their capital and threatened to hang their vice president. They didn't have that. We have that because of Trump. They have Zelensky. Zelensky is a Churchillian, Rooseveltian type of figure, transcendental leader. And they are very lucky, and we're very lucky they have him right now. So how do you go about doing this? The owner of the Wagner Group should be a marked man. One of the I think it's ironic, funny, cute, and sad in a way, is there's a counter to the Wagner Group, believe it or not, called the Mozart Group. The Mozart Group. And they picked another great German composer. Why is the terror mercenaries of Russia called the Wagner Group? Because this owner, this autocrat, this oligarch, is a huge fan of the composer Wagner. Remember the Ring Cycle and the Valkyrie and all that business? You know, women with horns giving these long arias. There's an old saying in opera, which is pretty true. It says, Wagner's music is better than it sounds. You have to be a devotee of Wagner. Yeah, he's a great composer. Mozart was a greater composer. The greatest in history. And Mozart's music is light. It's complex, but it's a joy to listen to. And so they're the Mozart Group. But the Mozart Group is a group of people loyal to Ukraine who are fighting the Russians, and they're putting together foreign fighters to help out. But these foreign fighters follow the rule of war. They do not kill civilians. They do not torture anybody. They take prisoners, they don't murder them on the spot. So it's kind of a disconnect between the Mozart Group and the Wagner Group. But the owner of the Wagner Group should be droned, like Soleimani, the Iranian terror general. We know where he is. The CIA knows where all these people are. We know their coordinates. The butcher of Aleppo, the general that Putin sent in to eastern Ukraine to massacre civilians. He's now the butcher of Mariupol. This is a guy who specializes in terror, and he's in the regular Russian army. He should be droned. If we want to do it with deniability, we train Ukrainians to operate these drones and give them some serious drones. varsity drones, not junior varsity drones. That's what we should be doing. And when he gets droned and the owner of the Wagner Group gets droned, the alarm among the oligarchs is going to increase. Putin will be diminished. The way to get Putin out is have him dragged out by a Russian mob or by his inner circle. It's the way to do it. He's afraid of it. That's why he's pursuing these things. And the way to get at him is to put so much pressure against the people around him that they have no recourse and have to get rid of him. So there you have it. The seeds of good news. The seeds of good news. The problem is that Hitler had people like that around him. And they tried to assassinate him, and they had a plot, and they could have done it when Chamberlain caved into him on Czechoslovakia. When Chamberlain did that, there was general relief in Germany, and Hitler got more popular. The assassins said, well, we can't do it right now. I don't know why. They should have done it right then. They did it later. They put a bomb under a table. It killed three people, three generals, and it wounded Hitler and didn't kill him. We can get Putin now. It's the only way to do it. We have to de-Putinize Russia before it's too late, and I've given you some ideas on how we can do it. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, in addition to arms and combat, there's some soft opposition, soft sanctions, cultural sanctions against Russia, the whole idea being to isolate them, limit them, make them pariahs. When they barge into the party, the music stops, the host comes to the door and says, dog, get out of here. That gets to people after a while. The Russians have a deep-seated inferiority complex, and they have for at least 1,000 years. I was in Russia, in Moscow and St. Petersburg, in June 1997, the delegation from our Justice Department, going around talking to groups of lawyers, prosecutors, members of the various governments, parliament, about our legal system. That was the height of glasnost. That was the height of cooperation between the United States and Russia. Soviet Union had been disbanded some years before. Boris Yeltsin was president. We were treated very well. And I've mentioned this before on the air, but I'm going to mention it again. After one of the talks about our justice system, guy comes up to me, real nice guy. And he said, Mr. Flynn, you had a lot of nice things to say about our culture. And I did. I'm a fan of Pushkin, Dostoevsky, Tchaikovsky. He said, well, if we're so great, how come we're so backward? That's what he said to me. I said, well, look, it has nothing to do with you or your national character. It has to do with geography. We have two oceans, the Pacific and the Atlantic, that have protected us from wars in Asia and Europe for hundreds of years. You have nothing. You're landlocked practically in some respects. You have China to the east, the Mongols. You have Islamist countries to the south. You have the Ottoman Empire and Turks to the west. You have spent 1,000 years or more being besieged by these kinds of cultures. And I don't know what our country would be like if we didn't have two oceans. That's what I said. I don't know. I mean, if that made him feel better. I don't think it made him feel better. I don't make him, but he was a nice guy. We had a nice talk. Well, now the idea is to isolate them further because of the genocidal sadist that is running them, Putin. So Wimbledon just announced that they will bar any players from Russia and Belarus. And they've done exactly the right thing. Exactly the right thing. The Olympics should bar them the next time around. I'll tell you what, the U.S. Open in New York should bar them. the French Open coming up should bar them. These are all the class events of tennis, and Wimbledon is probably the oldest, or one of the oldest, and the one that has the most foufra. You know, the Queen is there, all these women, these unbelievably unusual hats with birds on them and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's beautiful. It's like you know, some sort of Edwardian opera, you know. And there's a lot of prestige to it. It's sort of like the Masters in golf. And so these characters can be barred, and some of them are apparently pretty good. I don't think any Russian or Belarusian is number one, either in men's or women's tennis, but they're pretty high up there. They can't come. They can't come. And this wounds them terribly. And they go, well, we promised to stop drugging our teenage speed skaters. Oh, really? Thank you, Tavares. For some reason, I don't believe you. You've drugged them forever. There was that girl, that speed skater in the Olympics. She was unbelievable. She was really quite good, Russian. Then it came out she'd been taking illegal medications. And then she sort of fell apart, too much pressure. That's the way the Russians are. They abuse their own people. But Wimbledon's doing exactly the right thing. The so-called tennis players union, I mean, whatever that is, they go, oh, no, this is wrong. And this fellow, Jovic, whatever his name is, the Serbian guy who refused to take the vaccine, and then he couldn't play in the Australian Open, and he's a pain in the neck, and he's going, we got to let the Russians in. Well, let me tell you something, my friend. Serbia is pro-Russian. Vukic, their president, is demonstrably pro-Russian. Very, very similar cultures. So we're not going to be taking lessons in dictation from Serbia about Russia. Okay, so I don't want to hear from you anymore, and you better take the vaccine or they shouldn't let you play anyway. This is what's going on. Freeze them out. Deny visas to anybody from Belarus or Russia who tries to compete in international sports in the United States. Now, you can say some of these poor people probably are against the war. They probably are. There was one tennis player who put up this kind of pathetic little sign on TV as he was interviewed going, no war or something, and he took a hell of a lot of abuse. Here's the problem. They have relatives back in Russia. If they get up there and say, I would like Alexei Navalny, who's in jail right now, he's a great dissident, to be my president, they're liable to kidnap their mother and torture her. This is a Nazi state. I get it. I think what we can tell these athletes, musicians, conductors, speed skaters, intellectuals, professors who want to come to the United States, regrettably, Tavares, you are not going to get a visa. Because you are a citizen of the Nazi state, the Nazi terror state. We are going to ostracize and we are going to make a pariah of Russia and Belarus. Why Belarus? A lot of the Belarusians don't like their government. This guy Lukashenko is a thug, Putin guy. Putin has plans to, did have plans before Lukashenko got in to invade Belarus like Ukraine. Now he owns Belarus. Belarus rammed through with Lukashenko a referendum to merge Belarus with Russia. Belarus is a Slavic country just to the west of Russia. It has borders with Poland. Lukashenko, the pig, said he's going to invite Russia to put nuclear weapons on the Belarusian-Polish border. So how do you get to them? You get to them by putting pressure on the citizens. People over there, I mean, they drug their teenage athletes. People over there spend their entire lives ice skating or speed skating or ice dancing or tennis or something to be the best in the world. Don't let them in. And to all these clowns in the unions, tennis unions and this union and that union of athletes, these aren't regular unions. These aren't like the machinists, the electrical workers, the UAW. The ones I worked with all my life and respect and are very, very important to the labor. These are a lot of prima donnas, a lot of loudmouths who make a lot of money. They don't care about anybody but themselves. And now they want, what, Ruskies and Belaruskies in? Oh, okay, yeah, there's genocidal sadists there, but, you know, F them if they can't take a joke. No, we're not putting up with that. And this guy Jovic, this guy from Serbia, shooting his mouth off, won't take the vaccine. And now the clown wants what, Russians in? Well, he's not getting Russians in. He's not getting in himself unless he takes the vaccine. So Wimbledon did the right thing. What's coming up is going to be the U.S. Open in New York and the French Open. There's a so-called Grand Slam. There's Wimbledon, the French Open, the U.S. Open. I think Australia is now considered part of it, too. It's got to be said to the Ruskies, and the message has to come through their citizenry. You're not getting visas. You're not getting visas. And while we're at it, instead of just grabbing the yachts of these oligarchs, a lot of them are paying cash that they stole from their government for expensive estates in Florida, Atlanta, and New York. Don't just freeze them, confiscate them and send the money to Ukraine and put some in our treasury for the arms we have to send Ukraine. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
So make it one for my baby and one more for the road. The long, it's so long. The long.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. This is a great story. It's a great retribution story against Trump. Trump had a White House aide named Omarosa Manigault. What a great name. Omarosa Manigault. What a great name. Omarosa Manigault. That was her name. That is her name. Omarosa Manigault was a White House aide with a lot of different duties, but one of the duties was to be a liaison to the black community, the African-American community. She and Trump had a falling out. She quit. And she wrote a book. She wrote a book. And in the book, it came out in 2018. It was titled Unhinged, Unhinged by Trump. You should get it. It's a great book, Unhinged. And in, and quote, an insider's account of the Trump White House. That's the subtitle. Unhinged, an insider's account of the Trump White House. Came out in 2018. In the book, she said that she knew that Trump was fundamentally a, quote, racist and is in, quote, real and serious mental decline. Real and serious mental decline. Okay. She was an aide. Trump makes all of his aides and, frankly, all of his employees sign non-disclosure agreements. If they settle with them, and even if they don't, just non-disclosure in general, that they are prohibited from disclosing anything about their employment. And then he sues them, and a lot of these people, and he's done this before, can't afford a lawyer, they cave in, there's default judgments, and that's how he keeps silence among his employees. Omarosa Manigault didn't just bend over. She hired a lawyer. And one of the provisions in these non-disclosure agreements is that they be arbitrated as opposed to being taken to court. And that was a very serious mistake for Trump. Normally, companies like to do that because there are many, many professional arbitrators, and you know exactly from their prior decisions which way they lean. Try to pick one that's more on your side. But one of the things about arbitration, unlike a court case, is it can't be appealed. If an arbitrator comes in with an award, even if it's outlandish, it can really only be appealed to a court if there's fraud. And one of the examples of fraud would be that somebody bribed the arbitrator. Okay, that can be appealed. But just because the arbitrator is wrong on the law, or something's excessive, or blah, 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 the law is that it can't be appealed because judges like to encourage private resolution of disputes. They're overloaded anyway. And so they'll stick up for an arbitrator if somebody sues the arbitrator for a decision no matter what. This arbitrator came out with a decision in favor of Omarosa Manigault and ordered Trump to pay $1.3 million in her legal fees. Trump has to pay Omarosa Manigault $1.3 million in legal fees because he brought an arbitration complaint against her for writing the book Unhinged in 2018. And what the arbitrator said is exactly correct. Here's what he said. The arbitration complaint alleged a breach of a 2016 confidentiality agreement that he makes all his staff sign, that Trump said was violated in the 2018 book Unhinged. But the arbitrator said that the agreement was vague, indefinite, void, and unenforceable. And he's exactly right. An arbitrator can virtually do whatever he wants unless he's bribed. And that isn't much of an exaggeration either. And this particular decision would have been the decision, in my view, of even a court who had looked at this thing where it could have been appealed. Trump has now threatened to appeal. He always appeals. This time around, if he goes to court, if I were the judge, I would not only uphold the award of $1.3 million against him for Omarosa Manigault's legal fees, but I would impose significant legal fees and fines for frivolous filing against him and his lawyer. So at last he got caught on this one because he was foolish enough to trap himself in a little side river of arbitration where the court system isn't going to help him out. The court system is not going to help him out. The other thing is confidentiality agreements and non-disclosure agreements and various restrictive covenants and all of this are increasingly disfavored in employment because employers historically have tried to tie up lower-level employees with very unreasonable things and threaten them with the fear of litigation and lawyers' fees. Increasingly, that has been rejected by courts and by legislatures. In California right now, they have a prohibition against any restrictive covenant that somehow interferes with your right to work somewhere if you leave an employer. That's not what was at issue here. But under the First Amendment, Omarosa Manigault has a right to write a book. And when you have a non-disclosure agreement, or in this case, a confidentiality agreement, that just says you can't say anything bad about Trump, that is vague, it's indefinite, it's void, and it is unenforceable. She might have an obligation to be a whistleblower. So rather than do this sort of thing, I've got some advice to people, although Trump won't take it. Treat your employees well. Treat them nicely. Pay them fairly. Most people don't just leave and then stick a knife in you. Try to make them like you. And if they don't like you, that's fine. But if they're treated fairly, it's very, very unlikely they're going to do something like this. And if they do write something when you're known to be a fair employer, people will reject it. And quit. I mean, this guy, thin skin, this guy has no skin whatsoever. It's not just thin. It's non-existent. So somebody's on the way out, says he's a racist and in a real and serious mental decline. Okay. I mean, everybody claims, throws terms like that around. They throw them around on the mental thing about Biden. They're lying, of course. It comes with the territory. If you're a well-known person, people are going to say things. There's nothing factual in any of that. But he got himself trapped in a little rivulet, and he can't get out. So he's going to be paying $1.3 million. And then what happens is an arbitrator's award is not self-executing. You have to take that to court, convert it to a judgment. And then what you do is you docket it wherever Trump lives as real estate. You go in to garnish whatever compensation he's getting. For a guy like that who says he's a billionaire, $1.3 million is small change. He'll pay it off. He paid off the the $90 million settlement on Trump University, where he defrauded a lot of people who had a dream of being a real estate magnate like him, gave him their life savings, and he stole it from them. Should have gone to jail for that one, frankly, but he didn't. So he paid that. He'll pay this thing. All he's succeeded in doing is selling her book. I mean, all he's succeeded in doing is people go, wow, if he's that worried about her book, there must be something there. I mean, if he's that worried about her book, there must be something there. So good for you, Omarosa Manigault. You stuck Trump. You nailed him for $1.3 million. Unfortunately, it's going to go to your lawyer. You should get something on your own. You should get a slice of some sort. Don't know if you'll get a slice, but you certainly deserved it. I want to get back to the so-called soft exclusionary sanctions against Russia. We have obviously arms shipments to Ukraine where Russians get killed in combat. Then you have economic sanctions where Russia gets slowly strangled economically. Goods disappear from the shelves. They can't pay debt service on their bonds. And do you know that right now Putin comes out and he goes, this isn't hurting us at all. Mayor of Moscow said there are now 200,000 people thrown out of work in Moscow. 200,000. Because Western businesses have left and they have no jobs. And there are no Russian businesses around to hire them. They have to, this is not going to stop a genocide. The genocide has to be stopped by military action. That has to be stopped by more arms going to Ukraine. Get the planes, get more planes, get missile launchers, multi-missile launchers, get them, tanks, ammo, bomb the Russians. But in addition to economic and military support for Ukraine, In the case of Ukraine, we provide them with military with financial support, and we sanction Russia. There's also the social ostracization. I talked about Wimbledon in the U.S. Open and the French Open. Talked about denying visas to any Russian performer, any Russian. You know, maybe if it's Navalny's brother, okay, you let him in, but the rest of these people, I'll tell you what, out they go just to put pressure on them. Well, Janet Yellen took it to another level. There is a preliminary meeting of the G20 going on in Washington, D.C., and Janet Yellen, our Secretary of the Treasury, very fine Secretary of the Treasury, and other finance ministers and central bank governors got up and walked out of the G20 meeting when the Russian foreign treasury minister spoke on Zoom. Why is he speaking on Zoom when they're all there? Because he's sanctioned. He can't come to the United States. Can't come to Europe. Gets off a plane, they'd throw him in the hoosegow. He deserves to be in the hoosegow. You know, look, this isn't a technological difficulty. I don't know why they don't block a Zoom. This is Washington, D.C. You say, yeah, dog, we do not want you. Genocidal maniac Putin. Sadist, we don't want you. Should have done that. Really should have done that. But the second best thing was suddenly his face shows up on the Zoom screen. Janet Yellen, finance ministers and central bank governors from the UK, from Australia and other countries, just get up and walk out. Let him know he's being ostracized. He's not welcome. He's a savage, a terror savage. He's in the service of a genocidal sadist. This is another way of doing it. We're going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Sam, I was thinking it might be a good idea to talk about a Wisconsin, more local-oriented story. Wonder if there's any headline that's tickled your fancy that we can talk about.
Yeah, Matt, I was hoping to get your opinion on an article that came out yesterday in the journal Sentinel. It's about Republican candidate for the governor, Rebecca Clayfish, is inching towards backing a flat income tax, calling Wisconsin's current or century-old tax system foolish mistake. The Republican former lieutenant governor made the comments this week as she called the ending she called for ending taxes on retirement income and made the case for transformational income tax reform. She did not explicitly endorse a flat income tax, but she came close to doing so by disparaging the state's progressive income tax, which requires residents to pay higher tax rates on their income as it goes up.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. That really is a critical issue, and thank you for bringing that up. And I want to jump on that right now. Rebecca Clayfish, you know, I refer to her as the Duchess of Foxconn. Remember, she was the Foxconn aide to Walker, and it resulted in our promising $4 billion to a Chinese company who never made anything. They said they were going to make 10,000 jobs with $53,000 a year. It was all false. And then they got control of that land in Racine County, and they barred Intel and they barred Oshkosh Truck from setting up operations there that would have hired 1,000 people at very high wages. And they're just sitting there running out the statute of limitations on fraud. So that's Rebecca Clayfish. But this is an example of Clayfish really not knowing economics, and she could do tremendous damage. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, you turn over a piece of expensive machinery to somebody, and they come in with an axe and they don't even know what they're talking about. The so-called the progressive income tax is the kind of tax we have at the national and the state level. And what that says is, if you make a very little in income, at some point, if you make hardly any income, you're not going to pay any taxes, but you're going to pay a small percentage of your income. But as it goes up, you're going to pay a larger percentage of your income because you make more money. And you can adjust various rates from time to time. But there is a group in the Republican Party that says they pick it like 3%. Everybody pays 3%. So if you make $30,000 a year, 3% of, you know, a percent of $30,000 is $300. 3% is $900. You're going to be paying something like roughly $1,000 a year, whereas you wouldn't be doing that now. But if you make $50 million, you're only going to be paying 3%, which is a small amount of money for you. Not only is this inequitable, it's flat out bad economics. Why is it bad economics? It's bad economics because, first of all, what she's suggesting is going to leave a huge shortfall, and she's going to make up for that in the sales tax. Sales tax is a regressive tax. Some states have it up to 8%. Europe has what's called a VAT tax, value-added tax, that's 17 or 18%. And that means if you are somebody with very little money, single mom with three kids, you're going to go in and you're going to pay a very high sales tax, and so will Bill Gates. Well, Bill Gates doesn't care about it. But with you, it can be crippling. So you cannot let the Republicans get their hands on the economy. A Republican cannot be trusted with money, not because they'll steal it. Some will, but they'll help their donors steal it. But even the ones that won't help their donors steal it don't understand money. And they just parrot these economic ideas from the 19th century. And what they're going to end up doing is just what Walker did. Turned down $1 billion in train money, where everybody else is getting it, and it just goes to other states. That's our federal taxes he turned down. Turned down $1 billion in Medicare money, our federal taxes, and then trying to make up for it out of our state taxes, so he double bills us and giving a Chinese company, Foxconn, $4 billion. A Republican cannot be trusted with money. If you remember nothing else from this show, even if you don't remember, you're not woke if you don't know history, okay? Even if you don't remember that, remember that a Republican cannot be trusted with money, not because he will steal it, although some will, not because he will help his donors steal it, although some will, but because he doesn't know it. He's negligent. He's ignorant. Go to the lines. Joe of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today, Joe?
Well, it makes an interesting segue to the point I wanted you to speak to, which is that this lack of thinking about how policies may impede us financially down the road. And I'm thinking of this fact that people elected Trump knowing that he had this close relationship with Putin and not caring, absolutely not caring about that. And the result of that is that Putin could see that we were fractured. I mean, I think that the January 6th coup, nothing would indicate that more. The visuals of people crawling into our capital seeking to overturn an election states how fractured we were. So that the move against Ukraine it seemed like a good time for him. I was wondering, I was looking up how much that the U.S. has had to spend in sending arms to Ukraine for this very important maneuver that we need to do. And I looked it up in a fact sheet on U.S. security for Ukraine, and in the last week alone, we have sent $1 billion to Ukraine to help these people survive this onslaught. The total since the Biden administration began is $2 billion. Now, that's money that we didn't have to spend if we had a firmer stance against Putin that we surely didn't have during the Trump administration. So I was interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Joe, as always, you're very articulate and you really nail a very, very important issue. I agree with you 100%. And I'll put a little more flesh on the skeleton on this thing. You're absolutely right that the aid we've given to Ukraine military is a little over $2 billion, which didn't have to be spent. And now Biden is promising another $800 million that's in process of going out. Now, it absolutely had to be done, but Russia has a guy who is a Stalin wannabe. He's a Hitler wannabe, but historically he thinks he's a Stalin wannabe. He wants to recreate the Warsaw Pact and recreate dominance of Eastern Europe. Now, wouldn't it have been wonderful if instead of Trump, we had had a different president? I supported Hillary Clinton, but even if you didn't support Hillary Clinton, virtually any Democratic president, and if you're a Republican, even a moderate Republican, like a McCain or a Mitt Romney, anybody other than Trump, because when it comes to Russia, the foreign policy people in both parties understood the threat. They have a very sick man. Putin is a sick, homicidal individual with illusions of glory. And wouldn't it be nice if we were unified like Ukraine? I envy Ukraine, their unity, their love of country, their bonding as brothers and sisters with each other. I really envy that. And we had that at one time. We certainly had it in World War II. I remember as a kid, I was born in 47, so it was after World War II, but my uncle went off and fought in the Korean War. And all through that, we were unified. Now we're split seven ways from Sunday. And you're absolutely right that January 6th insurrection was the poster child for it. It's the visual for it, but it's more deep-seated than that. And the truth is that Trump was a big part of it. And you can say, and I agree, that Trump is not the cause, he's a symptom, and that there are deeper causes, and we can have that discussion, we will on the show. But Trump did it, and Trump was subservient to Putin. And there's an awful video that just came out that they resurrected of Trump and Zelensky talking, and Trump kind of sneering at him, saying, well, why don't you make peace with Putin? And Zelensky's looking at him with these wide eyes like, are you crazy? Trump is a Putin man because he was financially supported by Putin. He was bankrolled by Russians for a long time. And I happen to believe the Steele report that there's a compromising video. I'm going to a break, Joe, but that was an excellent point. That's exactly right. The lack of our unity is attributable largely to Trump, not exclusively. And it gave Putin an opening. And that's not only costing lives, it's costing a lot of money. Going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after.